Hello, world. Welcome to my show. This is Janet Kaliri, your life coach and your host of Sight for Sound Life Coaching on BBS Radio. Sight for Sound, that name comes from when I see things as they truly are, I make sound choices. When you see things as they truly are, you make sound choices. And again, I like to use the first person as much as possible, because when you hear it in the first person, then it's easy to absorb it and internalize it. Well, I am a life coach, and life coaching is a results-based, forward-moving relationship process in which you get to know yourself better. Isn't that lovely? It's lovely for me. I really enjoy getting to know myself better, but I really enjoy, as a coach, getting to know you better. And then watching you get to know yourself better and fall in love with yourself. It's just wonderful. It's just wonderful. Even all the stuff you don't like, you get to like it. It's so great. And part of what I do is I have this radio show every other Tuesday, and it's free coaching. And for the most part, I have guests on every show. And today, we have a returning guest, actually, from last year, Ortalia Shoshana Rogers. Hi. And I'll welcome her to the show in a few minutes. And I'm excited to have her here again. And for those of you who want to call in to, you know, ask questions, make a comment, share your thoughts, the numbers are on the screen on the bbsradio.com website, and here they are out loud, 877-876-5227. From Canada and the U.S. is 888-815-9756, and the local number 530-876-3222. Well, before I bring on Ortalia, I want to share some news with you. I'm so excited about so many things, even in the midst of what some people judge to be as a lousy time or, you know, a crisis. And that brings me to thing that I just created called the Compassion Campaign. Gut compassion? Do you get compassion? Of course you have compassion. So it's a call for compassion right now. Time is now for compassion, to make compassionate choices. Not in an hour, not when you think that you can afford it. I think these times are fascinating, and compassionate choices are essential. And compassion can be instrumental, or it is, I think it is, instrumental in making change in your life and in your community just by exercising compassion, or more compassion for yourself and for others. When you're compassionate with yourself and others, you create a path to maximize your potential in all areas of your life. Call me or email me to find out more about gut compassion, 323-252-0963, or janet@sightforsound.com. Call or email me about the compassion campaign. You will be so happy you did. This week, I believe my new website is going to be launched, www.sightforsound.com. That should be in the next day or two. And look out for announcements about my new book, Me With Me. That is right around the corner. I'm so happy to share all of that with you. And remember that my up-and-coming shows are November 4th, 18th, December 2nd, 16th, and 30th. I have some amazing guests. You can find out all that information on the bbsradio.com/sight4sound. Okay, so this is free coaching. We have an amazing world-renowned healer, teacher, author, mentor on the show today. Call in, ask questions, share your thoughts. And I now welcome Miss Ortalia Shoshana Rogers. Hello.
Hi. Great to be here.
Yay. Thank you for coming back, Ortalia.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for inviting me. I love being on with you. I love your energy and just fun being with you. Off the phone, on the phone, in person.
I know. We got to see each other about a month ago in Brooklyn. Actually, L.A. and then before that in Brooklyn.
Right.
So that is wonderful. Well, Miss Ortalia, you have a couple of books coming out. We can focus on one of them right now. I think maybe Beware of Baba in High Heels. The name of the book is Beware of Baba in High Heels. And what I understand is this book is a journey of manifesting spirit on earth. It's a story of faith and forgiveness. It explores humanness and allows or supports people to grow into their potential. But I think it's specifically around being accountable for each detail in your life. Is that true?
Yes. You don't even need me. You're doing a great job on your own there.
Well, thank you. It's my job. I do my homework.
Yeah, you explain it beautifully. Definitely, you know, so. Yes.
Okay. Well, I think the idea is to pay attention to the small stuff, every little detail, including listening to my own little voice. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So let's talk about that. What's so important about...
You know how they say God is in the details.
Uh-huh.
And many times we go through life. I know I do that a lot, where I'm not in the moment. You know, I'm either back or forward of myself. And to really be privy to every moment, to be conscious, is paying attention to the detail. I just received the other day a wonderful batch of flowers from a good friend of mine, and she said, stop to smell the roses. And it was such a wonderful reminder of how I rush through life at times, or I figure I need to do this or get that done, and so much from the neck up, and forgot the details of the rest of my body.
Mm.
Forgot the details of my relationship with others. And being in the moment is truly being with the details as they show up.
And I think that that's key for joy and happiness is mm-hmm. being in the moment and enjoying the moment.
Mm-hmm. There is, the joy is only found in the moment. You know, sometimes we get excited about the hopefulness of the future, or we have warm fuzzies about the past. But in this moment, to experience something in this moment, you know, when you have that aha moment, or you see something that the goosebumps are up and everything in you comes to full aliveness,
mm-hmm.
you know, that is being in the moment.
The aha.
Yeah, or seeing beautiful sunset and you're right with it.
Uh-huh.
Rather than being on the cell phone talking with someone.
Yeah. I was watching this guy walk. He was walking down the sidewalk talking on his cell phone, and he was walking his dog. And the leash was so tight and so short, and this dog kept trying to, you know, to move away and go play. And the owner was not even looking at him at all. And he just kept jerking the dog back on the leash. And while he was talking on the phone, and I was just like, oh, my, whatever happened to being in the moment?
I've seen that a lot, you know, the mothers that walk their babies in the park and everything. So the kid is sitting in the stroller and everything, and the mom is on the cell phone.
You know, so yeah.
How our world have changed.
It has.
Yeah.
And this is connected to your book here, this Beware of Baba and High Heels. And it comes from your teacher Hilda Charlton.
Hilda Charlton. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And she had shared a story with you all in her class in New York City. And I want to get into that, but I would love to read just the first sentence of the preface of your book. If that's okay.
Sure, absolutely.
Okay. So beware of Baba, B-A-B-A, Baba and High Heels. Friday the 13th of July, 1984, full moon, I was pronounced dead for 13 minutes. Shortly after my return to Earth, my life began to shift dramatically, and within the year, several sources told me that I needed to write a book. I'm a storyteller. Sit with me and stories come forth. To write a book, however, this was not for me, or so I thought. So congratulations on writing the book, which is great. And I think you are an amazing storyteller.
Hmm.
And I'm really glad that you wrote this book. And the idea about paying attention to detail, I would love for you to describe Hilda Charlton's her experience with Baba, and maybe define who Baba is for our listeners, and then talk about the story that she told you and how she passed the test.
You know, sometimes it still amazes me, you know, to describe Baba. It's like I figure everybody should know Sai Baba, and I'm sure many know.
Yeah.
Sai Baba is an avatar or a fully realized being, incarnate of God that is in India, and an amazing, amazing being that shares his love and healing with all of us. And he was born 1926, and he has a few centers in India, and people from around the world go and honor the energy of spirit through him and with him. And Hilda had been in India for 17 years and studied with Baba. So he had been one of the main beings that for her she regarded as her connectedness to spirit and her journey. So in one of the stories, in one of the classes, we used to go Thursday nights to St. John in the city, and St. John Cathedral. And she shared with us a story about her having a dream. And usually they say you don't dream of Baba. Baba dreams you, which means when you have a dream, Baba, it's a true experience in a different realm, that you really are with that energetic being together, and you're learning or studying or being tested.
Mm-hmm.
So he appeared in the dream, and he asked her to follow him, and excitedly she stood up, ready to follow him. And she said, suddenly she looked down, and she saw that her beloved Baba's feet had high heels on them. So she realized that she was being tested. And she stopped. She didn't follow, and he turned to her, and he said, you just passed the test. And her teaching of that was about discrimination and how at times we are, I don't know if I would call it spaced out, but we're not completely focused, we're not in the moment, we're not fully aligned, so we do things without thinking, or we jump into things without considering all the details.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have to create a detour and retrace our steps and come back to the place and start all over again. So being mindful is also being full of heart. So when you are with both, you are in the moment. And in that moment, you are connected to your divine source, and everything is guided by that. You're so connected to the inner voice. You're connected to the truth of the energy that you are.
Mm-hmm.
And that's being in the flow. And when we're in the flow,
the flow is the way to go.
And the flow is the way to go, yeah, because there's no stressing over that. In the flow, you fully trust. You know, there's no stress, no anxiety, no tension, just the bliss.
Well, I really love that experience of Hilda, how she, you know, it's such a great metaphor for paying attention to these days.
Yeah. Amazing teacher. I was very fortunate, and I was very blessed.
Yeah.
Yes.
And she had prefaced that dream, reminding us that we're constantly being tested in life, and whether that's, you know, when we're awake in our conscious state or whether we're in our unconscious state in our dreams. So, what are your thoughts on being tested in our dreams?
Oh, wow. That's a whole... That's a full arsenal.
Okay. Yeah.
I remember Hilda used to speak about the different levels of the dream time. You have the astral level, and you have the different dimensions. You have the place where you go and you study and you learn. You have the place where you go and you serve. I had one, if I can share this.
Yeah.
I had one dream. In the dream, there was a train wreck, and I went into the train, and people were screaming for help, and I was trying to get people out. And there was an Oriental mother, and she was just screaming for her baby. And they came with a gurney to take her, and I looked for the baby, and I found the baby, and thank God, just had a few scratches, but it was okay. And I put the baby in the mother's arms and woke up. Well, I shared that dream with my partner at the time, and woke up, and I turned the TV on, and wouldn't you know it, they zoom in on a train wreck, and what they zoom into is this Oriental woman lying there holding a baby.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so you ask, was it really a dream? And Hilda used to say that we, in the dream time, she had trained us to go and help people and work with people. So there's different dimension even in the dream time. There's also a Sufi statement that says, I believe, and don't quote me, but this is what I remember of it, something to do like a three-minute nightmare is like paying off 3 years of karma.
I believe 3 minutes of what?
Nightmare. If you go through the nightmare in your dream time, it's like you're saving yourself from not having to go through it for the 3 years. Interesting, right?
Yeah. Wow, then I must have shook off a lot of karma when I was a little kid. I had nightmares like every night for years. That's good.
There's also different reasons. It depends also the environment of where we sleep and what energy we go to sleep with. I mean, one of the best things to do is to go and reflect on your day before you go to sleep and share with gratitude all that you went through and forgive yourself for what you feel you haven't accomplished or didn't accomplish the way you want to accomplish, and go to sleep with that state of mind. When I remember to do that, I do sense the difference in my sleep time.
That's a good suggestion. Especially for people who have trouble sleeping.
Yeah.
Well, what What? So this book, Beware of Baba and High Heels, and the fact that it supports people in to grow in their potential.
Mm-hmm.
Is it all based around this foundation of paying attention to detail and noticing?
No, that's really the seed. That is, Janet, that is the seed that activated. If I can share a little bit of the forward with you, would that be okay?
Yes, our listeners want to know.
Okay. So the forward, you're holding a book that primarily explores the journey of three beings of light, or Taliya, Shivanandi, and Shoshana, from times before birth and continuing till mid-September of 95. In Beware of Baba in High Heels, or Taliya, along with other council members, design a plan to elevate the consciousness of humankind, a mission that will call humanity to healing, transformation, the release of limiting beliefs, will call them to emotional awarenesses, expanded consciousness, to humanity's divine blueprint, to the vibration of unconditional love. This story opens us to a realm of new possibilities involving planetary healing, work, service. It offers us an opportunity to grow, learn, and see ourselves in everyone. It asks us to journey down paths which might be difficult to believe and yet equally be true to the still small voice within. Beware of Baba in High Heels explores the physical and the metaphysical. It explores the natural and what many would call supernatural. The reader is urged to explore new lines of thought, discover emotional awarenesses, and deepen one's connection with spirit. It asks us to recall that we're part of something bigger, that we are divinely supported, and that we do matter and make a difference in this world. The information in this book is truthful and accurate from the perception of Ortaliya, Shivanandi, and Shoshana. However, several names have been changed. The best of our knowledge, the time sequence are accurate, conversation carried through time may become distorted in language. To the best of our knowledge, the quotes in the book are accurate. However, it is the energy of the conversations that we direct your attention. Open your hearts and minds to the fun and adventure of life. Enjoy. Blessings, Maitreya, author of Sisterhood of the Dove.
Yay, Maitreya!
Yay!
Yeah, he's been on my show a couple of times, too.
He's a wonderful writer, yeah.
Well, that's a beautiful forward and a description of the book. Tell me about the three names. So, Shoshana and Ortaliya and
Shivanandi.
Yeah.
So, before I do that, I also want to put a shout-out there to Debbie, who has been working and editing my book and has been doing wonders with it, and Major has been a ghostwriter with me on this book. Thank you both so, so, so much.
Hooray for Debbie and Maitreya.
Yay.
Thank you.
Shoshana is the name I've been given to this physical body upon incarnating here in 1953. In 1984, when I went through the near-death experience, when I went to the other side, I met up with Yogananda, and I was given that name, Shivanandi. When I returned and I found out more information about walk-ins, and I got informed about the different levels of consciousness, got inspired and learned so much more, I understood that the aspect that came through was this aspect called Shivanandi. Mm. Shivanandi was very much into the Hindu, into the Sanskrit, into the Eastern philosophy. Now, in 94, I had been called for it to get an attunement, Archangel Michael attunement. In that one, I had a vision. And in that vision, when I went up to the council, I was told about my seed name, star seed name, which is Ortaliya. So that's lightly giving you an idea of the three aspects of the name. In the book, it explains it much more and in more detail. Mm-hmm. But Shoshana is that the energy that was given from my parents is the name. Shoshana is also my grandmother's name from my father.
Beautiful name.
Yes. And Shivanandi, it's after the white bull that Shiva rode, which I found very interesting once I found that out, because my sun sign is a Taurus, you know, the bull.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so through the near-death experience, I turned into a white bull. Then I found out that Ortalia means the light of the Lamb of God. So now I graduated from being a double bull into a lamb.
So, wow.
Always in the cattle industry, what can I tell you? Have a cow, man.
Have a cow. I love it. If anybody wants to call in and ask questions or share your thoughts, 877-876-5227 or 530-876-3222. I have Miss Ortalia Shoshana Rogers on the show. We're talking about her book coming up entitled Beware of Baba in High Heels. So you're a storyteller. Now, that was my Boston accent. Did everybody hear that? Oh, my gosh. You're a storyteller.
Well, I can reverse the Israeli one. I can become Israeli on the phone and have my Israeli accent.
That would be fun. Well, I was getting at that you are a storyteller. Mm-hmm. And do you plan to have this book in storytelling form, like on audio? Or are you going to do both? Are you going to have it printed and audio?
I guess a step at a time, right? But I do believe that it will probably end up as an audio as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, you do have that voice.
Thank you.
Very comforting voice, but
I'll put
creative
them to sleep,
as well.
Right.
What?
Put them to sleep.
Going
that's
to right,
the
sleep. That's right. Did you want to talk about that?
Yeah, we're working the dream time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Working in the dream time. Okay. What else would you like to share about this book, Beware of Baba in High Heels?
Well, there is a longer name that didn't find the light of day yet, and I'm still working on that. The full name of the book was Beware of Baba in High Heels, Some Maya, Some Leela, But Mostly God.
Oh.
And the Hindu concept of Maya and Leela deals with the illusion and, you know, the tricks that our mind play on us through our divine self, you know, that the God tricks, so to speak, that we call them, that really in every moment we have a choice, and it reminds us that in every moment you have a choice and which path you choose. And it couples up with that aspect of being and watching the details and discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
So some Maya, some Leela, but mostly God. And my journey was so full of Maya and so full of Leela, and the undercurrent was always God. Because my relationship with God has been very, very strong my life, this life.
Well, I always want to talk about choice. and you brought it up. So your book is sending a message as well about choice, and I just think it's such an important topic, and it comes up often in my radio shows. It always comes up in my coaching, and I think when a person is aware that they become aware that they have choice in every moment, that creates a sense of freedom within that person. And I think spreading that word, you know, really supporting people and letting people know that they do have choice in every moment is a pathway to freedom and goodwill.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people think they don't have choice because they don't like the options. So and they get it confused. Well, I don't like that, so I don't really have a choice. And it's not about that. It's, well, we have choice and we might not like all the choices, but then the key is that we have choice in how we perceive the option or how we deal with it. And I would love to hear your thoughts on that, Wartalia.
Sure, I would love to. For one thing, I believe that many of us in our childhood were not presented with that opportunity. We were told what not to, many of us.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, for me, the awareness of choice comes even before we come into this incarnation. To me, it feels like the choice we made was prior to our incarnation. And so many of us forget it and go into a victim mode rather than, you know, we get into a place, I have to do this, rather than I get to do this.
Yeah, or I should.
Yeah. And we forget how much of a gift each step on this planet is for us to do our work here and to move forward. I remember one time my guide, Blue Eagle, when he said how he's looking forward for his next incarnation. And why would you want to? You're in spirit. You're doing great there. Why would you want the hardships here? And he said, the best and the fastest and the most profound way to experience growth is on Earth. And that really shifted the way I look at things.
Yeah, I see how it did.
Yeah.
The fastest way to growth or for growth is being on planet Earth.
Yes. It goes both ways. You can rise and you can fall, whichever you choose.
Yeah.
You know, and choices are also, like you said, it's at times is how we react to situation is also a choice. What energy we choose to hold in each moment is a choice.
And that's really important. Mm-hmm. Those small details.
Exactly.
I mean, really small details.
Right.
I have two choices. I don't like either one. I'm pissed off about them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the victim mentality. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So now the details are, okay, now I have choice about what I'm going to do with both choices or both options. I'm going to choose to, you know, to take on this certain attitude it's basically I'm going to choose to take on a certain attitude or a perception, et cetera, with each choice. And I think that is significant to the topic of detail, of paying attention to detail. It's like peeling the layers.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea of self-growth or self-realization, however people want to name it, it really is about the details. When you think that you're stopped and you're stuck, you always have another choice in that moment. So peel away another layer and look deeper. Look at another detail.
Mhm. Mhm. Yeah. Because sometimes even not making a choice is a choice, isn't it?
Yes. Not making a choice is a choice.
Yeah.
It really is.
Mhm.
It really is. And I actually wrote this in my book is. Not believing in something is actually believing in something. And when I don't believe in something, I'm attracting when I believe in something, I'm attracting what I believe. So the truth is that I'm always believing.
Right. You remind me of something that happened once, and this person said that they don't believe in God, and I said, really? I said, why don't you? And they said, well, I'm very angry because he did this and this and this. And I said, well, if you're angry at him, that means you believe in him. How can you be angry at someone if you don't believe in them? So
that's a good one.
Yeah.
This is true. And you were speaking about... In your forward, you were speaking about believing and asking people to believe. In the forward, it says that part of this book is asking people to believe. And there's that old saying that I'll believe it when I see it. But I have reversed that for many years to I'll see it when I believe it.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And, yeah,
where energy comes in two forms. It comes in particles and it comes in waves, right? And particles is that which we see, and waves is that which is unseen. But it's always, the particles always arrived from the waves. So it's, you know, we put it into the waves and then it manifests in forms into the particles.
Oh, okay.
You know, so usually if people wait to see it, in order to believe it, even when they will see it, they will question it. And they might have that excitement for the second, but then their disbelief is stronger because now the next thing they have to be proven.
Mm-hmm. So on that day, July 13th, when you were pronounced dead for 13 minutes, do you remember if you believed that you were dead, or...
Do I remember if I believed that I was dead?
Yeah.
It took some convincing, how's that?
Yeah.
What really, really stamped it for me, I went for a reading a few months later by this gentleman named Glenn Dove, who is mentioned in Aliens Among Us by Ruth Montgomery in the book. And in the reading, he said to me, and he pinpointed it to the date, because he did it according to astrology, and he said to me, on July 13th, you died.
Wow.
Uh-huh. And he said, and you walked in. And I was like, oh, my God. How could he know that, you know? And I realized that when you really trust all that, everything is written, everything is open, there are no hidden mysteries, only our willingness to see it or not makes it a mystery.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because when we truly know that all unfolds as it needs to, then there's no longer the mystery, only the trust, the flow, and the compassion to the self. Because one of the things that people want to see, like you said, I'll believe it when I see it. How stressful is that?
Yeah,
you know,
it really
and what
is.
Happened? And what happened if your sight goes before?
Yeah,
because stress could do that.
Then they're really out. They're really out. They've really lost them. No, it is stress. It's a victim mentality. Oh, I'm going to wait for something in order for me to be or feel or do something.
Mm-hmm. And you know, it's interesting because the meridian that connects eyesight and eyes is the kidneys, right?
Okay.
And one of the things of kidneys, of people having challenges with their kidneys, is usually their rebelliousness or being hard on themselves and others. So again, it's a place of disbelief, you know?
Oh. Everybody hear that one?
Is there anybody out there?
Yeah. Well, sometimes we have callers and sometimes we don't. It depends on the day. But I'm sure there are thousands of people who are listening.
Well, I definitely believe that.
Yeah.
Even though I don't hear them.
I believe it, too. We have no proof, but I believe it. I mean, if we were to say that we would believe it when we see it, you know, we wouldn't even see it. We wouldn't have really
hear it.
Say when we hear it.
Yeah.
And in that case, then if we didn't have our eyesight, it would be okay.
Well.
Oh, well, some of these, I guess, are, you know, are what we call tests. I mean, if someone is having a kidney problem, it could be a little test. Mm-hmm. For them to look at their rebellion or their disbelief. And I know in your preface, and I agree, is some people have, or some people conjure up a negative thought or tension or resistance when they hear the word test. And so some people will call it an initiation. I like to call it an experiment as well, because experiment can, I think it conjures up some fun and curiosity, but it also conjures up something that is temporary. And that temporary perception gives a nice ease and flow in a person too. So I wanted to bring that up because Hilda talks about how we were, you know, we're always being tested, and there are people who might cringe at the thought of being tested.
Well, you know how they say that in life the tests come first and then the lessons. In school come first the lesson, then the tests, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's very interesting what energy we feed the words and how we then react, like in NLP, you know, to those words and tests from school, people stressed over tests. So, yes, they go into life and it becomes very stressful. For me, it's really about growing our muscle, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's the different weights that we increase in order to have stronger muscles. Otherwise, they atrophy.
Yeah, and it's a repetition value.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, when someone is sculpting their body or changing their body and requires repetition, going to the gym and doing certain moves with equipment and weights, and it develops a certain detail, right?
Mm-hmm.
it develops a detail in the muscle.
Definition, right?
Mm-hmm. Definition.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, would you like to talk about your goddess healing of the seven rings of the heart?
Oh, I would love to. That is such a journey for me. If around February, when I returned from Brazil shortly afterwards, I have been guided by the goddess to bring forth this new healing modality called the Seven Rings of the Heart. And it has been an amazing journey with that, because as an energy comes forth, not only I work with it, teach it, and use it on others, it spins my life and pushes me through the experiments. How's that? And allows my growth process. So there is seven rings of the heart, because in the physical heart we have the seven layers of muscle. In the ascended heart we have the seven rings. And this holographic rings, each one holds a specific energy and a polarity to it. And the polarity holds the issues that atrophied those rings. So, for example, the first ring is compassion.
Compassion.
Yes. That word. Versus control. And henceforth, control is the tendency that atrophied that ring for us. And in the second ring, we have passion versus pain. Now, pain atrophied the second ring. And so forth and so on. And this journey, as I'm working on getting it into the word or expressing it and allowing the energy of the goddess to flow through me, has been such a metamorphosis on the way I choose to see things or think things, especially as the different healing avenues show up and as the goddess gives different outlets to shift and transform that and infuse those rings with life again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where we make a choice to choose compassion. Tendency for me was to look at compassion. I always viewed myself as a compassionate being, but I realized how much control I held towards myself and how controlling I could have been on others. You know, I definitely wasn't a control addict. And the goddess spoke about the difference between controlling or being in control, you know, and how we view being in control as positive. And because of that, it became shaded. Controlling was, okay, you're strong, you can do this. And yet there's so much more strength in compassion.
And I remember I wrote this down when I was talking with you. Control is constriction. Compassion is expansion.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I'm just putting this out there. I already know the answer, but just so it's really obvious for the men out there, just because you're working with goddesses, it doesn't mean that men are not allowed to do this.
Well, you know, every man has a mother.
Yeah.
And every man has his female side.
Yeah.
We have the yin and the yang. So when we're talking about the seven rings, they're not just embodied in female bodies, they're also in the male bodies. And in fact, we did one workshop in Kansas, and we had the four physical men there.
Mm-hmm.
And they were wonderful, and they had such wonderful sharing and enthusiasm about the work and candor, and they were wonderful, absolutely wonderful. One of the men that I partnered sat down, and he's in his late 50s, early 60s, sat down and sobbed like a little boy, and I just energetically saw the different players that flew off him. He
mm-hmm.
lost his mother when he was 10 years old.
Oh.
And doing the first ring deals with healing mother issues. And as he opened up and embraced Kuan Yin, you could see the transformation. You could visually see the transformation. So, amazing, amazing. So absolutely, yes, it's for men and women.
So every ring is governed by a goddess, and each goddess represents...
I can go through that. Kuan Yin is compassion versus control, the first ring. Isis is pain versus passion. Lakshmi is opportunity versus overwhelm.
Mm-hmm.
Mary Magdalene is unconditioned love versus unhappiness.
Oh, I think we have a caller, Ortalia.
Hello.
Oh,
hello. I have a question.
Hi, dear.
I have a question for Ortalia.
What's your name?
Analea.
Hi, Analea. Go ahead.
Hi, Analea.
Hello. I have a question for Ortalia.
Go ahead.
My question is, she spoke very briefly about being instead of doing, and I would like some more information or some more guidance on how one can live in the world of doing our job and being a mother and whatever else is involved in our lives, but also be in a place of being, in just being who we are.
Mm.
And combining those two aspects of our life in alignment.
Okay, very good question on that. Thank you.
Yeah.
So many times people look at the word being as idle. I did not see the word being as idle. there is still action in being, because you still breathe, you still think, you still feel. And when we're in our place of being, we're so much more connected to the inner still voice. We get the guidance of when to move forward or when not to. When we're in the place of doing, think about even what the word doing looks like. We look at it more as the physical body going to the action, where beingness is a wholeness being in action. So for me, being is not idle. For me, being is containing the energy within to know when and how to get that guidance and to flow with it, because the flow will guide us. So it's not about sitting in an idle space. But in that beingness, what we grow in is with patience, is with an awareness of how energy works. When we're so busy doing, we are not that connected or aligned with our inner knowingness. Does that help? Hello? Anybody out there?
Leia? Okay. Well, thank you, Analeia, for calling. And my guess is you're hearing Ortalia, all that she said, and what we're talking about right now. And I love your description of being and doing, Ortalia. And one thought that I want to add is, or combine with this is, the question of how am I being while I'm doing?
Mm-hmm.
And so perhaps it comes down again to details and choice. Maybe I'm doing something that I'm not enjoying. So Analeia gave an example about being at the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe I'm working at a job and I'm not really excited about my job. And
get another job.
Yeah. So...
Life is
that's
too short.
True, but I believe in staying in the game, working on myself in that game. And one way of working on myself in that game is, you know, how am I being in this game? What experience do I choose in this game? And to accomplish that, to create an experience that I didn't create before in this game that I don't like, then I think it's time to, you know, it's a good time to leave the game. And the game could be a relationship or a workplace, you know, a job or a career. So that's a very good question, Analeia.
Well, you know, that there's another thing. Think about the very first point of our entrance into this world, birthing. You cannot do birthing.
Yeah.
Birthing does you.
Yeah.
So we're completely in the beingness, and it's the greatest doing in the world because it's creation.
I love it. Birthing does you.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. Well, we have a couple left, so I'd love to hear the rest of the rings. I think you ended with Lakshmi, the ring of opportunity.
Yeah, then we came to Mary Magdalene, which is the fourth ring, unconditional love versus unhappiness. The fifth ring is Ishel, which is creativity versus being choked up. The sixth ring is Sophia. And let me just...
She's
the goddess of wisdom.
Wisdom.
So it's wisdom versus being wasted, you know, kind of like seeing we wasted our life or wasted our time. Or, and the seventh one is Shekinah, which is like the Holy Spirit or the dove. And can't believe that. Shekinah. Connected to spirit versus, hold on. In a minute.
I have your website up here.
Versus It's cloudy and scattered, I think.
The ring of spirit, connection to source.
Connection to source.
And versus cloudy and scattered. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so you say, and so I say, and I believe that the answers are hidden deep within us, and this seven rings of heart of is a simple way really to uncover all the answers.
Mm-hmm. And not only the answers. It's once they start pumping life into us again, because think about it, this is like we should really be going with the 12 strands of DNA, right?
Uh-huh.
And it's the same science, so to speak, because what we're working on is activating an energy that has been dormant within us. How many times we hear that we're working only with 10% of our brain capacity?
I know.
So it's the same, it goes under the same lineage of awakening the full potential by infusing these rings once again and living from our ascended heart rather than constantly burdening our physical heart with so much stress, control, pain, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So healing that definitely helps the physical heart, which then helps our wholeness, our
yes.
beingness, yeah.
Well, it is a an extraordinary package, and so far a very interesting adventure for myself. I have started the Seven Rings of the Heart with Ordelia, and I'm in the Compassion, the first ring with Kuan Yin, Mercy and Compassion. And how do people reach you, connect with you, if they want to know more about the Seven Rings of the Heart and find out how they can buy your book when it's out there?
Well, they can go to my, they can send me an email at soar221@aol.com, or they can call me at 718-238-0474.
Wonderful. 718-238-0474 if you'd like to find out more about Ortelia and the Seven Rings of Heart and Baba. Beware of Baba and High Heels, her book coming out soon. And thank you, Ortelia, for taking the time to be here and engaged in conversation
thank
with me.
You.
And
Thank you, Janet. And another shout-out that I want to put out that I did not as an oversight. I want to also thank Christiella for scribing so much of the book off tape. So, thank you.
Okay, Christiella.
Thank you, Janet, so much for availing this time and allowing me to share the message.
You're so welcome. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Don and Seth, it's Janet Kaleri, Sight for Sound. Your life coach, and I will see you in a couple of weeks. Thank you. Have a great day. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.